You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. My guest this week is Jennifer Bracaris. She is the director of the Independent Women's Forum Law Center. And an issue that I think probably affects every family in America, especially if you have children attending college or in the next year or so will be attending college, and that is sexual misconduct on campuses. First and foremost, is it fairly treated by colleges and their administrations? And if not, what's being done? And we'll be talking with Jennifer for the next half hour and getting her input and her insights on what I consider a very, very important issue to almost every family here in America. Jennifer, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
You and I talked a little bit before broadcast. You know, when you have kids, just on the cusp of going to college or on a college campus, attending colleges now, and it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, here in the Boston area or out in the West Coast, there's going to be things going on. I mean, men and women since the dawn of time, whatever it may be, whether it was consensual, non-consensual, sexual misconduct is part and parcel, of the society we live in. But let me ask you first and foremost, how big of a problem is this on American campuses?
So that's an interesting question. If you asked sort of feminist interest groups, they would tell you that 1 in 4 women on college campuses will be sexually assaulted sometime in their 4 years. I do not believe that that statistic is accurate. It actually does not mesh with the statistics from the Department of Justice or from the FBI. It is based on very loose survey data where young women on a few college campuses were asked questions about behaviors and things that may have happened on campus, and then the people doing the study decided whether or not to classify those behaviors as assault. So, in other words, the students were not asked, were you raped, were you assaulted, were you sexually harassed. They were asked, have you ever been the subject of an unwanted touching? Have you ever been kissed without giving your consent first? So they were asked these very broad, open questions. Well, not broad questions, but they were asked questions about behaviors without asking, were you assaulted? Yeah. So that number scares a lot of people, yeah. Right? They think 25% of women on college campuses are going to be raped. I mean, who would send their daughter into such an environment? I certainly would not. If I believed that statistic to be true, I would not have sent either of my two daughters off to college campuses where they are right now.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. I mean, that's staggering if that were indeed the case. Another part and parcel of all of this, and I want to get your sense on it, is that we live in a more open society today, whether it's whether it's through social media or just the fact that everything seems to be within a blink of an eye, something happening anywhere in this country or anywhere in the world, actually, it just instantaneously put out there on the web or otherwise. Sexual misconduct has been going on, as I said earlier, since the dawn of time, so I don't think it's something new. But in light of the fact that so many women today have so many more opportunities than perhaps 50, 60, 70 years ago, some people are saying, well, you know, a lot of women have now empowered and they put themselves in situations. I don't like to hear that because I'm a father of a daughter, and you have two daughters yourself.
I have three, actually.
Three.
Yeah, two in college and one who's not, and then a son. So I see the gamut.
Yeah, and it almost, at times, it makes it sound like, well, they put themselves in a position, that made them vulnerable. I don't buy that, and I don't agree with that, but what's your sense?
Well, I don't think any victim of sexual assault, can be blamed in any way. Certainly not. And certainly sexual assaults and rapes do happen on college campuses. I just don't believe they happen with the frequency that some of the far left groups will tell you they happen. The problem is, on college campuses, I would say 30 years ago, 40 years ago, college campuses did not take this problem seriously at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if a young woman were to go to an administrator and say that she had been assaulted, that administrator would have been more concerned with protecting the university's liability, not embarrassing the university, and would have attempted to brush it under the rug. I have friends and relatives that this happened to. Even in one case where the young woman went to the district attorney and it was being pursued in the criminal justice system, the college did very little to make sure that she was separated on campus from the person who assaulted her. So certainly this was a problem. Now the pendulum has swung in the opposite direction, too far in the opposite direction, in my view, where now any allegation, even of things that we would not consider to be rape or assault under the law, are now treated as rape. So, for example, at Brown University, they consider sexual misconduct or assault anytime somebody seduces someone else under false pretenses. Well, you know, how many times has somebody been told that, you know, they loved, that they were loved and that they were going to have a relationship only to find out the next day that they did not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our definitions of sexual misconduct and sexual assault have expanded beyond what we traditionally think of as rape, assault, or sexual harassment.
Yeah, that's interesting because you're exactly right. The massive amounts of money that come into universities and colleges across this country for their endowments, that always seemed, it's always been something that bothered me, is that's the first thing. Protect the image of the college. Make sure that, donors and alumni don't get the wrong idea. Make sure the public doesn't get the wrong idea because we have an image to uphold. And that's the wrong view altogether. As
right.
you said,
and that's still what's happening now in the sense that it used to be they would sort of cover for the offenders to protect their image. Now, especially with the Me Too movement, what the public demands is harsh and swift justice. So in order to satisfy, the donors and the public sensibilities of today, they've gone in the opposite direction.
Which leads me to the next question. So therefore, I get the sense that college campuses, college administrations, I should say, are not capable of handling this fairly, and this brings in the crux of our discussion this evening, and that is that Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos is about to put forth what looks like a whole set of standards that would give guidance and kind of level the playing field. Am I getting that right?
Sort of. So the regulations are more than a guidance. They would be binding as a matter of law.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's attempting to do is to restore balance in the system because it has gone too far in the other direction. So what these regulations do is remind schools of their obligations to take every complaint of sexual assault or harassment seriously, to investigate every complaint, and to provide resources and supportive measures for victims. But at the same time, if they're going to investigate and discipline those who are accused, they need to provide those people with certain basic rights, such as people who are accused need to know what they're accused of. They need to know it in a timely fashion so they can prepare their defense. They need to be able to see the evidence. They need to be able to question the credibility of the witnesses. You can't bring people in to an administrative tribunal and accuse them of rape or assault and forever brand them a rapist on the basis of flimsy evidence that they don't have a chance to challenge. So what the regulations attempt to do is give people who are accused a chance to tell their side of the story.
Yeah, some due process. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it almost, you know, as I take a step back and I look at this, Jennifer, I get the sense, and I think I might have alluded to it earlier, that you send your child, your loved one, boy or girl, to a college in hopes another step, another phase of their life, and you want them to get the education, but in a safe environment. But I'm getting this sense that, you know, school administrations, college administrations, at least from the perspective of the Secretary of Education, feels that they're not capable. So therefore, I have to step in and put forth, you know, as you said, not just guidelines, but, you know, something that's going to hold. So am I being unfair to college administrations that they're not capable of handling this in the right way, whether it's from the victim's point of view or from the accused?
I would have to agree with you. I mean, colleges and universities would say, look, we handle all sorts of misconduct, academic misconduct. You know, if somebody steals something from a roommate or someone in their dorm, right? If school disciplinary committees deal with those types of infractions. They do it all the time. The problem is that sexual assault is a serious crime. It is not the same as stealing somebody's iPhone. And the way they are handling these cases, interestingly, is at most schools very different from the way they handle academic misconduct cases. So in cases of academic misconduct, if a student is accused of cheating, for example, the school has to prove its case by clear and convincing evidence before they can suspend or expel the student. In cases of sexual assault, they've lowered the burden of proof to a mere preponderance of the evidence. And what that means is that all they have to show is that it's more likely than not that the accuser is telling the truth as opposed to the accused. Well, many of these cases come down to he said, she said.
Right.
So it's a question of who do you believe? Do you believe the accuser or do you believe the accused? And that question often depends on how the person's story holds up under questioning or cross-examination. But if you're not allowed to do that, on what basis are these committees deciding, well, you know, I think it's more likely than not that the accuser is telling the truth. He doesn't seem like a good guy, so guilty as charged.
Yeah,
he's a frat bro. Guilty as charged. I mean, that's what's happening.
And that is, you know, regardless, as I said, whether you know, you've got a son or a daughter in college, either way, you want a fair... you want the facts to come out, but in a fair process so you get to the truth and nothing more. I want to take a quick pause, and we're going to be right back. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner. My guest this week is Jennifer Braceras. She is the director of the Independent Women's Forum's Law Center, and we're talking about what every parent should really have their antennas up on this one, and that's the rash of campus sexual misconduct cases across the country. Are they being treated fairly? And should the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, step in with broader and yet, you know, guidelines and laws that would give due process? You know, Jennifer, you're exactly right. I mean, I get the same sense that if a guy comes in and he's, you know, a good talker and he can, you know, sometimes that can sway. And the other side of the coin, it could be a young lady that just, you know, just knows how to bring people to the, you know, bring tears to their eyes and, you know, tell the sad story. And that's just not good enough, at least in my eyes. But let me ask you, I mean, are you confident that even the federal government, even the Secretary of Education, who is spearheading this, can she put this on an even level playing field so that, you know, as you said earlier, you just want to get to the truth. We don't want someone to be prosecuted if there's really no guilt there. And at the same token, those who are guilty, we certainly want them to pay, you know, whatever it may be, whether it's through criminal process or you know, just losing their tenure at the college. Are you confident that the federal government can do the right thing?
Well, I'm confident that the regulations that she has proposed are fair and balanced to both sides and do what they can to protect students on campus, to require universities and colleges to provide supportive services and measures for victims, and at the same time to protect the due process rights of the accused. Whether universities will comply is a whole other question. I think the rules strike the right balance, but the truth is the Department of Education has no law enforcement capacity,
right?
And so their ability to enforce the regulations is really based on their ability to withdraw federal funding. And so that's sort of the threat, the sword of Damocles that they dangle over the heads of these universities, is that if you don't comply with our regulations, you are at risk of losing federal funding. But the fact is, you know, they issue these regulations, and then colleges either will or will not comply. And in order to bring them into compliance, the department would have to open an investigation into a specific university, and then find that they, you know, either are or not complying, and then see what measure they would take in terms of reduction of funding. And that's actually never happened in the history of Title IX and the Civil Rights Office at the Department of Education. They've used it as a threat, and they've been able to extract settlements in cases of discrimination under Title IX, but they've never actually pulled the trigger on withdrawing funding, and the universities know that.
Yeah, exactly. I was just as you were talking about that, I'm thinking, okay, so they threaten, but I mean, a threat is one thing, and these colleges and campuses have seen this time and again, and as you said, there's really no. We've never seen it actually, you know, take hold. Something else I want to bring into the picture, because you touched upon it earlier, the Me Too movement. I can tell you that companies, corporations, right here in Massachusetts, central Massachusetts, where I have friends or family working, no longer can, in some cases, can a male or a female have a private meeting in any office with the door closed unless there's a third party in there. What I'm trying to do here is just set a tone for where we've come as a society. This has spilled over onto college campuses as well, right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's spilled over onto college campuses in the sense that there is a heightened awareness of what is and is not appropriate behavior, and that's a good thing. But it hasn't spilled over in the sense that these are still kids, right? And they are not taking precautions necessarily to protect themselves. Either from sexual harassment or false accusations of sexual harassment, right? So they're not, for example, avoiding being alone in a room with a member of the opposite sex, having drank a lot of alcohol at 3 a.m. They're not avoiding those situations. And frankly, they should be. And the colleges are not cautioning against that. I believe if colleges and universities were really concerned about the levels of sexual assault on campus, they would do a lot more training on alcohol abuse. They would do a lot more training on how to protect yourself when you go out, right? There are lots of simple things, right? Stay together with your friends. Don't get separated from the group. You know, there are a lot of things that they could be telling their students. They don't tell them that.
Right.
They don't tell them that. What they tell them is that where to report a crime if it happens, and what they tell them is, you know, no means no, and they tell them, you know, here's the number for the Title IX office, but they don't tell them how to protect themselves.
Right. That's a good point. In fact, I have a friend who is an administrator at a local college, and what she has said to me in regards to this issue is that we're not there to babysit them. They're 18, 19, 20-year-olds. If they don't know enough to not put themselves in a position like that, then there's nothing we can do. And
yet they're trying to police it at the back end, right? And so, I mean, any law enforcement officer will tell you that prevention is the most important part of the equation. I mean, if you're just punishing offenses after the fact, you know, you're not keeping people safe.
Right, right. And it's, you know, as you said, I mean, I don't think it's fair. They're still kids. I don't care. 17, 18-year-old, maybe the first time away from home, you know, and all the temptations that are out there. And you know what I'm talking about. We've all been in there. You know, none of us are walking around with a halo over our heads, or shouldn't be anyway. But, I mean, again, I go back to the point is, okay, so Betsy DeVos sets out these standards and you know, they've used this threat of cutting federal funding. And I'm sure that gets colleges' attention. But should it really, as you said, it should begin on the college campuses themselves, correct?
Yes, of course. And really, you know, this needs to be tackled campus by campus, right? Every campus has a responsibility to try to keep their students safe and to ensure that all students are treated fairly and with due process. That's something that needs to, you know, we need to go campus by campus and make sure that that's happening. That's the reality.
Do you see that happening, though, in reality?
No, I do not, on either end, actually. I do not. I do not see colleges providing the necessary resources for victims. I do not see colleges providing students with the tools or the advice as to how to keep themselves safe. And I certainly do not see them providing due process to students who are accused of what are basically crimes.
And my sense is that even if Congress decided to, you know, throw their interest to this in this case and try and legislate law, it would only get challenged in the courts, and this thing would be a long, drawn-out battle between colleges and the government, and nothing would really, nothing solid or tangible would come of it. Or am I missing something?
No, I think that that's true. I mean, and what's interesting is there have been hundreds of cases brought against universities by students, both victims who felt that the process was unfair, but mostly by accused students who were expelled or suspended and felt that they were wrongly accused and that the process was unfair. And in many of these cases, the courts have sided with the students and against the colleges and universities. And many more, the colleges have settled the cases out of court.
Right.
And paid God knows how much money to these students who were kicked out of school, and yet they don't go back and change their models.
Right.
Right? So, you know, ordinarily if someone brings a lawsuit for some policy, right, if a company were sued because it had some policy that violated, you know, the employment laws and regulations, and they were continuously settling cases out of court, they would change the policy.
You would think.
But the universities don't do that. They just keep paying off these cases and continuing forward.
I don't want to sound crass here, but I think, you know, we kind of alluded to it earlier on, and not all colleges. Some are just, you know, not doing as well as others, but, you know, some well-known universities across this country have enormous endowments. They have the means, the financial means, as you said, to just pay it off, keep it quiet, keep it out of the media, and hope that it goes away, and that's how they continue to solve this problem. And I hope it doesn't get any worse before something, you know, is done. Let's hope that Betsy DeVos, you know, puts forth something that everybody buys into. But as you said, it really does begin by educating. And I think it is the responsibility of the colleges. You know, you put your child there, you're paying big money to put them on a college campus and get an education. But at the same time, as you said, you want peace of mind as a parent that they're safe, they're secure. You know, unless it's something that they do blatantly, and let's face it, you know, they're capable of that as well. We're only human. But for the most part, I think they need to step up to the plate. In the last few moments that we have, this is a very interesting topic, something that I know parents especially will certainly key into and want to get more information. That being the case, where can they get more information about the work and the research that you've been doing on this?
Well, they can go to our website, which is IWF.org. We actually have a policy paper coming out this month. Our January policy focus is on sexual assault and due process on campus. So that will provide a lot of information and further resources for parents and students as well. So they can look to that.
And Jennifer's advice, I would hope that everybody would heed that opportunity, because it's an issue that at some point, you know, let's face it, especially those with children, they're eventually going to go to college, whether it's a son or a daughter. You want them, as I said earlier, and Jennifer has alluded to this as well. She is also a parent with three daughters, two on college campuses. This is an important issue, something we need to provide safety for and due process so that it's done fairly on both sides of the process. Sexual assault on college campuses should not be tolerated. It should be something that needs to be addressed, and hopefully sooner than later. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, Jennifer Braceras. She is the director of the Independent Women's Law Center in Washington, D.C. We'll be talking about sexual assault and due process on college campuses. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions or feedback back to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org, or on our safe and secure website, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.